I'm not a poet, so I am really honored to be here. Thank you, Chris and Joan, for inviting me. So I'm going to read two flash pieces. One is fiction, this first one, and the other is nonfiction. This one is called Not Daniel. I parked in the shadows behind the hospice center and waited. I held a box of condoms on my lap, Magnum XLs. It was like being 16 again, except this time I bought the condoms instead of relying on the boy. This time the boy was a man I had mistaken for someone I'd gone to junior high with when our paths first crossed 2 weeks before at the main entrance of the hospice center. I was coming, he was going. I thought he was Daniel McMurray, so I stared longer than I should have, and he stared back. Later that evening, I'd run into him again, coming out of the room across from my mother's. His mother had breast cancer, mine ovarian. I checked my phone, 10:27. I'd timed the Walmart run for the condoms pretty well. Not Daniel would be down in 3 minutes. To throw Nurse Irie, the night nurse, off the trail, we never left or returned to the floor at the same time. Her name wasn't really Irie, but I called her that behind her back because she was Jamaican. She was also mean as a snake. I had complained to the head of the center about her, suggesting that her brusque manner was better suited for the morgue. But Nurse Irie liked Not Daniel. She didn't cop an attitude when he asked questions about his mother's care. He told me she even joked with him late one night as he walked around the floor in his skimpy running shorts. Boy, you keep running around here in those itty-bitty things. Someone might mess around and give you a sponge bath. Nurse Irie was not a stupid woman. Perhaps she would put two and two together and figure out that Not Daniel and I were, what were we? What do you call it when your mothers are hospice neighbors and the nights are endless and sleepless? And here's someone who spent the day talking to insurance companies and creditors and banks and pastors and relatives and friends, some more well-intentioned than others. Someone who is the dutiful son to your dutiful daughter, another family's chief shit handler, bail bondsman, maid, chauffeur, therapist, career advisor, ATM. Here's someone else who both welcomes and dreads death as it loiters in the wings, an unpredictable actor. What do you call it when that someone else wears a wedding band but never mentions his wife by name? A wife and two kids back home in the next state over. Don't ask, don't tell. At exactly 10:30, Not Daniel tapped the passenger side window. For a few moments, we sat in silence the way we always did at first. Sometimes I would cry. Sometimes he would too. Because we could, out here, beyond the reach of our mothers, Jesus, nurses on autopilot, empty platitudes and garbage theology about God's will disguised as comfort. And then, eventually, one of us would speak. But this night, how to begin? Pick up where we'd left off the night before, when yet another rambling conversation about funerals and selfish siblings suddenly became kissing, became my t-shirt off, became my nipples and Not Daniel's mouth. This is how we began. Not Daniel took the box of condoms from me and set it on the dashboard next to my phone. Then he set his phone on the dashboard. I knew his ringer volume, like mine, was on the highest setting because the call, that call, could come at any moment. Then he took my face in his hands and looked at me. I dropped my eyes. No, he said, I need you to be here, all of you, here. Lifting my eyes to meet his, I felt like Sisyphus pushing that rock. In his eyes, I saw wife, kids, dying mother. I blinked and blinked again until my vision cleared. In the back seat, Not Daniel undressed me, undressed himself, and then buried his face between my legs. I reached over my head, clutched a door behind me, and cried as I came over and over again. By the time Not Daniel pulled me to my knees, my legs were limp and useless. He turned me away from him, pressed his palm against the center of my back, and pushed me forward. He draped his body over mine and entered me. He was rough, but not unkind. I wondered if he was thinking what I was thinking. What if one of our mothers dies while we're down here rutting around, as my grandmother would say? But in the cramped space of the back seat of our and of our grief and our need, there was no room for guilt or fear, only relief. And that's what I told Not Daniel when we were both spent, our backs damp, our damp backs sticking to the leather seat. Relieved. He frowned and then smiled. Relieved? Then I failed to deliver the goods. No, no, I said, you delivered the goods. The goods were delivered and received, but I do have a question. Shoot. Were you worried that one of them would die while we were down here? Thought never crossed my mind. Really? Really? Listen, I can either deliver the goods or I can think about my mama dying or not, but I can't do both. And then I laughed, even though I felt like I shouldn't have, even though nothing was as it should be. Thank you. So this one is nonfiction. This is called Whiting. Anybody else from the South? Southerners? Yes. Like, I love your hand just went up. Where in the South?
Alabama.
Okay. Jacksonville, Florida. So, where?
Texas.
Texas. Okay. So Whiting. You know we eat some Whiting. Whiting has been called the hot dog of the sea because it's so cheap. But fishermen love this tasty sport fish because it grabs the lure hard and puts up a good fight. My father said, every Sunday morning while your mother lies across town dying, I will make you fried whiting, grits, and cat's head biscuits to make up for telling a judge that you weren't mine. Something to fill your 33-year-old belly for that time I tried to pass you off as my little sister to my new girlfriend when you were 3. A hearty breakfast for those times when you were in grade school and I took you to bars and fed you French fries with ketchup as you fed quarter after quarter into the pinball machine while I drank bottle after bottle of pink champagne. Some Southern hospitality for asking you to call other women mama. A home-cooked meal for that time I got you a car but didn't make the payments, so the repo man tracked you down at college and took it back. Something to stick to your ribs for those times when I said I would come pick you up, take you to the fair, give you lunch money, but didn't. My father said, I already buttered the grits and the biscuits for you. You know how to pick the bones out the whiting, don't you? I do the math, the brittle calculus that this fatherless girl has learned. Take the value of the car my father didn't actually buy me, subtract 33% rage because the repo man kept his gun holstered, add 5 figures in unpaid child support, then carry the time he bragged to me, I got me a white girl. The answer equals exactly 6 Sundays worth of breakfast, a fraction of what it cost me to gather up the pieces of a girl shattered like broken seashells from the sands of the ocean floor. My father said, this is your inheritance. Spread it like a balm on your broken heart. Some fried whiting, some grits, and cat's head biscuits. You know, they call them cat's head biscuits because they're as big around and fluffy as a cat's head. I did not know that. For 33 years, I put up a good fight, but my mother lies dying across town. Cancer rages, and believing that I must always be looked after in this world, my mother has asked my father to make things right with me, and she has asked me to let him. She does not, however, give us a blueprint for this. So come Sunday morning, I eat breakfast at my father's house. I come again and again until my mother dies one August morning. Then I travel 1,000 miles back to my other life, the life I left behind to be with my mother as she transitioned while riding upon wave after wave of our laughter, spiked with delauded from this world to the next after 52 two short years. I go back to my life with two wide-eyed daughters and a soon-to-be ex-husband, a man who is a prized blue marlin of a father. By December, my father will also be dead, a massive stroke. I don't know this during those six Sunday morning breakfasts. I simply enjoy. I close my eyes and I tell myself, this is what love tastes like. Every bone in the whiting is an apology. Every grain of the grits, an apology. The cat's head biscuit, a mound of apologies. Everything my father does not say.